I believe I have made a significant find in the internet ruins, a volume of ancient apple burial practices and funerary incantations. It is entitled Naturam de Montem, roughly translated, The Last Knock. It deals with horror and horror movies and those forces which roam the dark web. It is through listening to this podcast that the demons are given license to possess the ears of the living. And God forgive me for what I'm about to unleash. I am the ill-fated Johnny Numb. And joining me tonight, as always, is.
Billy Crash.
And this is indeed The Last Knock. And welcome. And if you don't know where that little paraphrased opening spiel is from, it's from Sam Raimi's 1981 film, The Evil Dead. And tonight we are going to be discussing The Evil Dead, its sequels, its offshoots, of which there are a couple at this point. And, their influence on the horror genre, our feelings toward these films, and just in general, giving an overview of this, very, very popular series. It's definitely transcended, I think, its cult status and become a legitimate mainstream phenomenon over the years. But before we get into the show proper, we're going to keep the Deadites at bay for just a little bit to give a super special scream out to Susan Layton, also known as, yes, Susan on the Ledge on Twitter. And she is a writer for the horror website 1428elm.com. And she is also the individual responsible for spearheading the recent hashtag Bring Back Boomstick. And Susan and I got to talking, and she asked me whether we could, give what they're trying to do a little shout out on the show, and here it is. Essentially, to nutshell it, as most of us in the horror community know, Ash versus the Evil Dead is a Starz TV show that continues the adventures of Bruce Campbell as Ashley
Misadventures.
William. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Ashy slashy.
But there was apparently some controversy and concern that the ratings for Ash versus the Evil Dead were appearing lower than they actually were due to piracy issues.
Sons
Which,
of
in addition
bitches.
to, yeah, which is very unfortunate. And actually, recently there was something about a sequel to Digging Up the Marrow, that Adam Green film, but apparently they were having problems because that film, of all films, was being heavily bootlegged and pirated. So a similar fate seems to have unfortunately befallen Ash versus the Evil Dead, though it seems like through this hashtag campaign, and there is also a petition on change.org to keep the show going, which I did sign off on this morning. And I know you did too, Bill. There has been this groundswell of interest and people voicing their concern. And the fact of the matter is, I've only watched season one. I have season two in my apartment, but I have not gotten around to it yet, which I know is inexcusable.
It's
But
awesome, man.
yeah, first season was so much fun, and I was really kind of surprised at how, creative it was, how good the writing was, and how, great Bruce Campbell still is in that role.
Yeah, the cast is excellent, and the whole cool thing was with season two. It's like it just keeps on coming. There's more happening in 1/2 hour of Ash versus Evil Dead than 3 episodes of friggin' The Walking Dead combined.
Well, and something I like about Ash versus the Evil Dead is that the episodes are only 30 minutes, so they're like quick, kind of like they hit you kind of quick,
Yep.
and
Gore laugh,
you
gore
know,
laugh, gore laugh. It goes on and on.
yeah, they definitely don't outstay your welcome. So by the time
No.
one episode ends, and if you're watching it on the DVD or Blu-ray, you're kind of ready to go into the next one. So
It's my favorite show on television, period.
yeah, and so like I said, it's a great show from what I've watched of it. The good news is, the news has broken that Ash versus the Evil Dead will be returning for season 3 on February 25th, 2018 at 9 p.m.
Just so you know, Johnny, it's just Ash versus Evil Dead. There's no article.
Do you know what? I was thinking that was the case, and I was second guessing myself. I am
Oh, that's
really
okay.
not a I am an imposter of a fan.
Oh, get out of here. No, but I mean, no, I talk to people all the time. They put it in there automatically, because they just think of the original The Evil Dead.
I think there's a little confusion because, you have the original film, which is The Evil Dead, and then later on you got the remake, which dropped the article as well. So
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly. It's okay.
which
It's
one
all
is
good.
it?
Ash
But
versus
in
Evil
an
Dead, yeah.
Ash versus Evil Dead. Thank you, Bill. So in any case, that's our kind of extended scream out to Susan and
Yes.
the Bring Back Boomstick campaign and Ash
Yes.
versus Evil Dead.
Yeah. Season 4 and beyond.
Beyond, beyond, beyond.
From beyond. That's something else.
And you will face the sea of darkness and all therein that can be explored. So, Bill, maybe we can start off the show by maybe going back to the beginning.
Yeah, let's do it. 1981.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the Evil Dead is that it takes a, I don't know, was this kind of the first Cabin in the Woods movie?
Well, I guess it could be construed as that. Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell and company, they found the this abandoned cabin in the woods. Apparently, it's been burned down. I think Sam Raimi said he burned it down after production. Only the chimney remains, and apparently there's a time capsule in there, and fans found that time capsule, but no one's ever said what's in the time capsule. It's like it's taken on its own like whirlwind of like mythology, but
Sure.
yeah, I mean this was the Cabin in the Woods story. Well, any old horror isolated tales. I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
you had cabins in The Legend of Boggy Creek from 1972, and I don't know, but this is definitely my favorite Cabin in the Woods films.
Yeah, and something I like about, I didn't it took me a while to warm up to The Evil Dead, actually. And I sort of have an erratic relationship with the series overall, but
Yeah,
I
I
really
do
like
too.
I really like yeah, I really like the first one a lot now, because the setup is so simple, and maybe I thought it was just too simple at the time. It's just essentially four early 20 somethings going to this cabin in the woods for the weekend. That's it.
Yep.
And they discover some stuff in the basement, some recordings from a scientist who is mysteriously absent from the movie. And through listening to this old reel-to-reel tape, they awaken these malevolent forces in the forest,
From the
and they proceed.
Necronomicon.
Absolutely, ex libris. And they proceed to take possession of pretty much everybody they can within this cabin. So
Oh yeah, it's a blast. I mean, I'll admit I do like The Evil Dead, but Evil Dead 2 I prefer, which is pretty much them remaking their own damn movie, which is a blast, I think.
yeah, I think they've even admitted that.
Yeah, they did. They did. They're like, ah, screw it, we'll just do it again and do it different and do it better. And I think they did.
Well, Bill, what do you think about going back to the original? I think one of the reasons they decided to do a sequel and to do it so close to the But a lot of facets of the original was because I think Sam Raimi was like, they thought the first film was too serious. There wasn't enough comedy, so they put a lot more into Evil Dead 2. But, I think there's a fair amount of comedy in the original, but maybe it's more incidental than deliberate.
Yeah, I think you might be right. I think you're onto something there because the funny thing is, The Evil Dead, if you look it up on IMDb, it's listed just as a horror movie. And Evil Dead 2 is listed as a comedy horror. And I just like, I think, like you were saying, it was incidental because it with Evil Dead 2, and I know we're going back and forth and I apologize, but with Evil Dead 2, it was planned, and because it was planned, they did I think a better, more of a seamless job of it, of making it work. And I think it was the so I agree with you with the first one. And I think it's funny, like, Betsy Baker tells this story where when she was approached by the filmmakers, she wanted to meet in a public place, a restaurant, because she didn't trust them and all, it's like, hey, man, hey, and I'm Sam Raimi. I want to make a movie. You want to be in my movie? Get out of here, you freak, and Bruce Campbell, and, they shot it down in, what, Morristown, Tennessee, and, then they ran out of money, and then they had to do it again. Then they got the money. I think Bruce Campbell put up a lot of stuff. That's why he became co-producer. And what you would call it. And then, his hairstyle changed and all that stuff.
And I think you mentioned Bruce Campbell, Bill, and obviously we're going to be talking about him a lot tonight. But I think part of the reason I felt that there was more comedy in the first one was maybe because I saw some of the other films before the first one proper. And also because Bruce Campbell has just this, he has such a distinct look, and he's really baby faced in the original.
But his chin is prominent regardless.
If chins could kill.
Yes, the chin is in. Yeah, and Bruce Campbell, I mean, he like, he made to me he made the whole thing work because he's just so animated and his facial expressions are so fantastic, and he's a physical comedian. His body language says so much, and I've seen him in serious roles too, and he could pull it off, man. He could do it all, but he's just this one of those figures. He walks in the door and he owns the room.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a scene in the first film that I love where I think he's getting knocked around the room by a deadite, and a shelf falls on him.
Oh,
Like he's on the floor and he's trying to get up, and then the shelf falls on him, knocking him back down. And it's just like his expression is priceless in it. It's like, ah, damn, you feel for this poor guy, but at the same time, it's kind of hilarious in its own way. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, just all of his facial expressions are just so it's like he's wearing his emotions on his sleeve every time he makes a face, and it's perfect. It's just, he delivers it so well. I know that like he and Sam were Sam Raimi were what high school friends, and they made Super 8 movies and stuff. So I'm sure they had it down pat, like pretty much like Sam. Sam Raimi isn't an idiot. He's like, yeah, Bruce has to be in it. And I wonder how much direction he gave, Campbell. I wonder if it was more like, do your thing, just like roll him. This is easy. Oh shit, we ran out of money. Damn, but man, they what a team, man. They made it work. I mean, The Evil Dead is, like you said, it had that cult following, but now it's like held in high regard from people outside of the cult, and as it should be. What they pulled off was just wonderful. The effects are strong. The comedy, well, the slapstick elements of it, it's brutal. They did a really fantastic job, man. It's very
Yeah,
impressive.
and I know in the past Sam Raimi has talked about, I mean, it's kind of apparent when you watch his later movies, like that he was heavily influenced by the Three Stooges,
Yeah,
with
because
the
fake Shemp is like listed everywhere for all the assorted characters that show up as
That's right.
deadites.
And the film also is interesting because it marks a a collaboration with the Coen brothers that Sam Raimi would they'd collaborate in other films as well. I guess their most prominent collaboration was the film Crime Wave in 85, which also featured Bruce Campbell, but it was Sam Raimi directing a Coen brothers script. And I've seen that movie. I think it's hilarious. But apparently Sam Raimi hates it to the point where he's disowned it. So I'm not sure what happened there, but I found it highly entertaining, and it's very much a throwback to screwball comedies like from the 30s and 40s. But Bill, what do you think about the fact that I believe the film was either released unrated or with like an unofficial NC-17 rating at the time? Like, looking at it now, do you think
No. Come on. Yeah, 'cause it was banned in Germany and all this crap and it's like c please, why? Come on. Like what's going on in there? Nothing. What was there? Was there minor nudity? I don't even remember it, but what, 'cause of the gore?
There wasn't, no.
No. It's like come on, man.
It might have been because of the gore, and back then it was, I feel like there was more of a blitz on gore in movies than
Sounds like
there is
a sounds
now.
like a Reagan era back, you know, backlash or something, you know, because they filmed it in what 80 and like 81. 81 is like it's like officially done, but it didn't really get a release until April in 83 in the United States. And yeah, that was during the Reagan era, and that's when I think they were pulling in the reins of whatchamacallit, when the MPAA got tougher. I mean, because you think just in what 75 with Caligula, people thought like porn was going to go mainstream, and then.
Well, I think, Bill, I actually think Caligula was like 79 or 80. I think
Really?
it was more recent than that,
Holy
yeah.
crap. Well, I'm gonna look that freaking thing up right now. But yeah, I mean there's it's not warranted for, you know, I don't think. It's just it's ridiculous. I mean, if it were released today, it'd just be an R rating and no one would bat an eye.
Yeah, I'm wondering if like maybe we have the benefit of like hindsight here because we obviously saw the film later.
Yeah, and you're right about
After we,
79. I'm sorry. Yeah, 79 for Caligula. Damn.
yeah,
And then Reagan became president and everything changed.
thank God Caligula squeaked in just
Yeah.
under
Yeah, no,
the under the
Bob Guccione's happy. I know that.
that movie's still around.
Talk about a cult following.
Yeah, definitely. But I think maybe at the time with how it was executed, and you didn't. I don't know that you really saw people getting dismembered, and then you see the body parts squirming around on the floor
Yeah.
after that someone's been hacked up with an axe sort of thing. So I can see that there might have been a bit of like, oh my God, I'm gonna faint because I've never seen this before sort of
Right.
thing. And the fact that all of it was done, of course, practically with some stop motion thrown in there
Oh yeah, they
near
had
the end.
yeah, and they had some cool models in there and stuff, and it's just, that's such a great thing. They created such an atmosphere where Tim Philo did the photography and all, and they just created this great atmosphere of it has a cool factor to it, you know. It has this like 80s feel to, you know, very much so. But it's just like, you know, hey man, just let the movie roll, have a blast, have a laugh, and then get drunk and talk about it or something, you know.
Well, Bill, speaking of the photography, what did you think about the and this appears in, well, in Evil Dead 2 and in the remake as well, but what do you think of the driving force of just the camera like zooming through the forest at these
It's a blast.
bizarre angles, knocking down trees and shit, knocking through doors and chasing people through the cabin and everything?
Yeah, and what I love about that cabin, because like when especially when the, you know, that driving evil force goes through it, it's like, how big is this cabin, man? It's got like 30 rooms or something. It's just like, you know, door after door, and it's got a basement. What cabin in a forest has a basement, man? Come on, you know, and it's just, you know, and they have electricity that works out of the blue. Like, who turned it? Where does it come from? You know, it's just like, who cares? You know, it's just like maybe the evil force is instilling the electricity. And okay, that's fine. But it was just so like
Yeah, it was so trippy, and I just love it. It almost gave it like a funhouse effect too, and especially with the perspective, from this evil wind, coming down on you, if not an evil tree. And I just love it, man. It was a blast.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Bill, because it seems like the cabin expands
Oh
somehow
yeah.
magically when the force knocks down the door. Because I'm like, yeah, this thing is like a square box when you first see it, and then
Oh,
all of
it
a sudden
goes
when it's
deep.
ch oh, yeah, when it's chasing down Ash, it suddenly starts to turn into a, I don't know what you want to call it, a condo.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's like all these rooms, it's like some mystery mansion thing. It's like all these, I don't know what, yeah, it's like there's what other bedrooms and stuff, and it was just crazy. It's like so vast and expansive. It was just it was a tri and all Bruce Campbell wanted to do was get laid. It's like, and look what happened. Ash wants to get laid, and oh man, I unleashed an evil force. Well, there, that's what you get, buddy.
You wind up cutting off your girlfriend's head and burying her.
I
Yeah,
know, that
some
just,
weekend, yeah.
yeah, I know, man. All I want to do is get laid, and I laid her to rest. Oh,
Oh.
bam! Whoosh. Oh, man.
Well, one more thing about the original, Bill, and I know we'll probably like just be overlapping conversation with all the movies,
Oh, yeah.
but I do like the tagline, maybe because it's sort of tongue in cheek, because it's the ultimate experience in grueling horror, and it sort of smacks of that exaggerated sort of tagline you would see like on 70s exploitation posters and
Oh,
stuff like
yeah.
that. It was like, how do you deliver on this premise? And maybe at the time, people seeing it hadn't seen anything like what it had to offer before, so maybe it did deliver on that promise for a lot of people. But today it's kind of like, I think there's a bit of a showmanship definitely in that tagline. I wouldn't be surprised if Raimi came up with that himself,
Oh, I
so
have no doubt. No doubt
yeah.
whatsoever. Oh, man. Because then we have what? Yeah, Evil Dead 2 with Henrietta and company coming up in 87. Oh, come to Henrietta. No, I don't wanna stay away. And then because like yeah, that's when Ted Raimi played the possessed Henrietta, and he was in that crazy suit and dying and suffering and sweating his butt off and almost passing out.
From what I hear, Sam Raimi takes every opportunity to abuse his
Oh
brother
yeah, it
in
was
his movies.
exactly.
Yeah. Poor
And
Ted.
poor Ted, but Ted crushed it, man. He
Yeah. Oh, he always
crushed it.
does.
Yeah, he
Yeah.
always does. Any role he owns it. And yeah, he was perfect for that. And well, the cool thing about Evil Dead 2 is we give, we do have better lighting, we do have better film quality, and we have a more profound story with other characters that are brought in to, make, more characters means more death, means, every time you add a character, it's one more red shirt for the grinder, it's just like,
Well, and there's also more potential to get creative with the practical effects too.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And man, does like friggin' Bruce Campbell's Ash character get beaten the shit in this movie? Oh my God, from human beings, from deadites, from evil forces, trees, stuff floating around, furniture coming to life. Oh man, it's like I wonder how he made it. I wonder how many times he was like really beaten up.
Well, the poor guy is like, he even gets possessed at one point in the film, too.
Oh yeah, that and oh man, like I love the laughing scene too, where he just goes nuts and everything's laughing, and it was great because it looked like actually a scene from like a Disney film, and then it goes very dark again,
You know what, Bill? You know what that reminds me of now that I think about it? It reminds me of that Japanese film, Hasu.
Oh my gosh, yeah, 1977. Yep. Oh
Yeah, sort of
man.
the same craziness going on inside the going inside the house.
Oh yeah, that got crazy, man. That got crazy. But yeah, we had additional people, and Dan Hicks played Jake. Cassie Wesley DePava, yeah, I know, played Bobby Joe, and you know,
Bobby Joe, Bobby Joe.
Oh my God. But it was just, it was funny because even though it was, you know, it had its, you know, funny spots and all, it really had this whole dramatic element to it. And, you know, can we keep the evil forces at bay? Can we stop it from going beyond this place? And, you know, I just thought I just love, like, I'll sit down, I'll put in Evil Dead 2, and I'll just kick back and just, like, you know, man, that was great, and just let it go again, you know? I'll just, like, I gotta see it again. I'll, like, the same moment, you know, like, as soon as it ends, yeah, I'm doing my own double header at home, you know, double feature at home by watching Evil Dead 2 twice. How about that? That's, like... 2 to the 2nd power. That's like, so I'm watching it like technically 4 times and 2 different universes or something. I have no idea what I just said.
Well, you know, that interdimensional stuff does come into play, Bill, so I can see that happening.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Bill, did you I'm curious now, because I feel like depending on where you are at a point in time, sometimes we see stuff out of order. Did you see Evil Dead 2 before the first film, or did you see them in order?
I think I did see them in order, and I remember Evil Dead. It was like, to me, it was okay. It was good, and then when I saw Evil Dead 2, I was like, this is it. It's like. And I think that's what they wanted to do anyway. They wanted to, like, get it right by doing it over again. And I think they really got it right the second time. So, because I really enjoyed Evil Dead 2. That's my favorite of the whole franchise.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's like, it's interesting because Evil Dead 2, and I know it's so, I know it's extremely well loved among horror fans. And I get it. But, you know, it's always been the one film of the franchise that I've had trouble, like, I like it, I don't love it.
So you like Evil Dead, The Evil Dead, more than Evil Dead 2?
I would say so, and I'm, like, thinking maybe it's because I like kind of the low-budget grubbiness of the first film, you know, and maybe the simplicity of it, whereas, you know, a lot of the stuff you were saying about how the, you know, obviously they had a bigger production budget, they're able to do more with the sets and be more ambitious with the effects. The second one seemed a bit more calculated to me. It had a little less of the element of surprise, maybe, and maybe it was because it was set up like a remake, that it was like, oh, okay, we kind of know what to expect, because Ash is helpfully recapping it for us in voiceover at the very beginning. So, you know, granted, you have those wrinkles in there, like with the new characters, like you mentioned, and how it, the story does kind of spin off into its own direction, and then it does end on a cliffhanger, which is kind of...
Oh, boy, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But, no, I know where you're coming from, but I just thought it was, it still has that great independent feel. It does at times seem like there is a sense of improv to it, which I enjoy. I just thought, you know, like, things were a little bit more spectacular in it, which I thought was cool. And I liked having a little bit, you know, more characters in it. But, I wouldn't kick out, you know, the Evil Dead. I wouldn't kick it out of bed for eating crackers. You know what I mean? I mean, it was just like, I'll take them both, you know, definitely. They're both a blast. They're both a great trip, a great ride. A lot of fun, and you get the scares, and you get the laughs as well, you know. And it's I can't imagine, you know, like, you know, what his character goes through. It's like, how long would I survive? I'd be like, and we used to run it all over the place, you know. And it's like, I can imagine, like, cut, Bruce is out of gas. Yeah, man, I need a sandwich. Help me, you know. It's like, you know.
Well, you know,
because he's dropping from the sky, and he's like waking up in a puddle, and he can't breathe, and I'm like, oh, like he's got that. I keep reading how, like, those contacts, the white contacts that they wore, were like, they had to take them out every 15 minutes because the eyes couldn't breathe. They were really bad, you know, difficult to work with and not pleasant, and
you know, you read about Ted Raimi in that suit, you know, and like what he was suffering from, and it's just cool how they plowed through just to like, you know, let's do something cool and entertain and move forward. So, you know, you hear people sacrificing for their art, and I think with both of these films, they all did.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, I think if you know the original Evil Dead was kind of a calling card for, hey, this is what Raimi can do on a low budget, then Evil Dead 2 is kind of like a calling card for what he can do on a slightly higher budget. And mm-hmm. you can see, you know, when he got when Hollywood picked him up for like Spider-Man and a bunch of other stuff, you can really still see the what do you want to call it, the traits mm-hmm. that he brought over from those films, sort of like the zany camera angles, the use of effects, you know, that, you know, just very matter of fact, not necessarily there's a very hands-on approach to his Hollywood stuff as much as there is with his low budget stuff. And I feel like with, you know, when certain directors who started off like Raimi did wind up getting courted by Hollywood, there's sometimes their signatures are a bit harder to find because there's so much between them and the actual movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got a huge ass cast, huge ass crew, and then
right,
you know, it's like, where, you know, how do you filter your vision sort of through that sea of people that it takes to make a movie. So I think Raimi is one that has done a good job of maintaining that.
Yeah, and I think you know, Stephen King, apparently, from what I've heard, you know, he really enjoyed, you know, The Evil Dead. And he convinced, apparently, Dino De Laurentiis to, you know, help finance the film. And that's why the second one had the money that it ended up needing to rock, you know?
Oh, okay.
Unless that's wrong, but I see that everywhere, and I've heard that everywhere. So,
you know what, Bill, I think I have heard, if it's not exactly that, it's something very close to it, because Stephen King, I think, said it was, I think he called the original the most original horror film of that year. So,
mm-hmm.
And at the time, you know, he was a couple books into his career, so he was definitely on a hot streak. So people were going to listen to what he was going to say. Sure. So.
Gotcha. No, I'm just thinking about, I know, I'm just thinking about how apparently the character, you know, Bobby Joe was inspired by Holly Hunter. Did you ever really hear anything of that? Yeah, because like
No, but they look alike, yeah.
Exactly. Like she was Holly Hunter was a housemate of Sam Raimi's at one point.
What?
Along with Joel Cohen and Frances McDormand. I don't know if this is true or not. And yeah, I don't know. Well, that's you know, you hear so many things, and it's like, unless I hear Sam Raimi or Bruce Campbell tell the story, then it's like, I can't believe it, you know?
Well, and the thing is, if you've ever heard Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell, like in interviews or whatever, they really go for the gusto. The way they talk, I think both of them are fascinating to talk to listen to.
Oh yeah. I want them on a panel. Know,
oh, absolutely, because they have that real sense of showmanship. It's not like like some horror cons you go to that have panels. People are just kind of obviously don't have a lot of investment in like a movie that was maybe made 20 or 30 years ago, so their answers aren't too enthusiastic or too knowledgeable. But these two guys, you can tell they remember pretty much fucking everything.
Yeah, because they did everything. I mean, you know, apparently even on The Evil Dead, Bruce Campbell is listed now as being in the makeup department, even though uncredited, you know, in the credits. So it's like,
oh wow, okay.
You know, and apparently, you know, he was pushing the boat at one point so Sam Raimi could take some shots, and like, you know, all this crazy stuff. And you know, you hear that from independent films all the time. You know, it's like at one point so-and-so, the star, had to grab the boom mic and everything else, and not the boomstick, but the boom mic. And so you know, so I'm sure they were
boom mic.
Yeah, and I'm sure they remember it well because, you know, they put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and money into it. And plus, this is the thing that launched both their careers.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Bill. It's like, obviously they have plenty of memories associated with it because that this is what people... I would say Raimi's gone on to do like Hollywood movies, and some of them I barely, you know, it's like, oh, he did that movie with Kevin Costner, For the Love of the Game, but who remembers that? Nobody remembers that. Everybody remembers Evil Dead and Darkman and stuff like that.
So, yeah, they remember the cool stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame because Sam Raimi's done some good, like, movies outside of horror. Like, if you've ever seen, I like A Simple Plan from 98.
Yeah, I have some issues with that, but Billy, oh my gosh.
Bill Paxton.
Well, yeah, Bill Paxton, of course, but Thornton, just like, man, that's one of his best roles ever, man.
Oh, God, Billy Bob, he's tragic, man, in that movie. Oh, yeah. But
the dialogue and what he does and how he says it and everything, it just kills it.
I can't do this, Hank. I can't do this.
Oh, that's very good, Johnny. That's very good.
Billy Bob! Oh. Billy Bob!
Oh, man. But so let's get... What?
Well, did you want to mention the cliffhanger, Bill, which leads into the next movie?
Yeah, because that's, I think at this point we're not giving anything away, so I guess this is your little spoiler alert. But, you know, Ash gets sucked into the vortex with the car, with the chainsaw hand. It's totally groovy. And he drops out of the sky in medieval times. And, things aren't going well for him. He's going to be attacked by this army who thinks he's, you know, that he's in cahoots with this evil force from the Necronomicon. And then, you know, Boomstick comes into play and he takes out some flying evil reptile thing. And it's like, yay, you're a hero. We love you, man. And the way the car lands, it's totally destroyed. And it's like, but wait, there's Army of Darkness. And suddenly the ending we saw is completely changed. And not only can the car drive, but they're not looking at Ash as the hero in medieval times. They're looking at him as like, you villainous bastard, you're going into the pit of whatever. And
well,
it's,
I think,
like,
that's, you
wow,
know, that's what they would have done back then, Bill. It was like, oh, he's a sorcerer, he's involved with black magic or something.
Oh, man. And I know, like, Army of Darkness, I know our good friend at Palco Designs, Greg Palco, loves it. I think he told me, I know every line from that movie. You know, it's like, and a lot of people do. For them, for a lot of people, this is like this is like the best of the bunch.
Well, what do you think, Bill?
It's my least favorite of the bunch.
I was going to say, this is like the one time, I think, where me and Greg Palco agree on something.
Holy hell, man. That's new.
Now, I think we agreed on something recently on a show that, well, by the time this posts, it'll have probably posted, but I can't remember what it was. I think this is the first time in one of the Evil Dead movies really clicked with me back in my teens or whatever. Because I was like, yeah, the original was okay, the second one was okay, but I, for some reason, this one sort of connected me. Maybe because it was so different than the first two. It's
quite different.
You know, if the first one was more of a straight-up horror and the second one sort of blended more comedy in with the horror, this one is almost like it's a horror, but it's almost like more of an adventure kind of film in its own way.
Yeah, it's an adventure horror comedy, and the only thing is, to me, in spots, it just got too corny for me.
Okay.
And that's why I didn't really care for it, but it doesn't mean I don't like the film, but it's definitely not up there, you know, for me. But you know, Bruce Campbell with the beautiful M. Beth Davids, and you know, they have such great people like Ian Abercrombie and, you know, Richard Grove and Timothy Patrick Quill as the blacksmith, and it's just Bridget Fonda, Patricia
For
Tallman's
like two
in it.
Seconds.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But still, Patricia Tallman's in it. You know, Ted Raimi again.
And Bill Moseley plays the evil Ash or whatever.
Yes, he does. He plays the Deadite Captain.
Yes.
Ta-da! No, so it's... no, so you have... And even Ivan Raimi's in it, who co-wrote it, you know?
It's really a family affair.
Totally, totally, absolutely. Raimi of Darkness. But you know, in this one, well, we have a two-pronged, you know, problem. You know, Ash is like, you know, trying to like, you know, get the book and make sure it doesn't get open again, and he also wants to get the hell out of there, back to his own time, get back to the old story, you know.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, it's like he's told by, I guess it's Ian Abercrombie, it's like, okay, you need to retrieve this book, but and say this incantation.
Yes,
you know, and it's the classic scene where he fucks up the incantation by forgetting the last word.
Yeah, I got it. I mean, and you think at this point, with all the shit he's been through, like hubris would be out the window, and he'd be like, "What? Can you say that again? I need to write it down." You know, like I'd be so, like I wouldn't be taking any damn chances after all of this crap. Holy hell, man!
Give me your writing stick so I might write the incantation down.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man.
Well, I think you touched on something there that is one of the reasons I maybe like this movie the best of the bunch, or almost the best of the bunch. I think the humor fit more here, or at least was a bit more refined than in Evil Dead 2. A lot more of that connected with me. I didn't mind the fact that it kind of overtook the story at times, because one of the appealing things is watching smarmy Ash, you know, work his way through like the formal medieval times that he's stuck in, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
yeah, I just thought he was hilarious. Just the scene where he's, you know, they take him into the castle and he's like laying back while these beautiful women fan him and feed him grapes and everything.
Oh man, yeah, he didn't want to go home then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because he's like the semi-reluctant hero, because it's like, you know, then he wants to get involved and he wants to bring them, like, you know, create peace among the other, you know, chieftains, and like, oh, you guys got to work together. And then it's like, leave me alone. He's like, you know, bouncing back and forth, you know, semi-slacker mode. And then, you know, and then he just gets caught up in it, you know.
And I love, like, M. Beth Davis's character is like, but what about all those sweet words you said to me? And he's like, well, that's just what we call pillow talk, baby.
Yeah, I know. It's like, he's such a dick. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, and it's fascinating to kind of see the evolution of his character, because in The Evil Dead, he's kind of a straight character. He's, you know, he loses his girlfriend, he loses his sister, and then in the second film, he's kind of has a little less to lose, and he's given over to madness to a degree, and he's gone through a lot of shit. So I can sort of buy the evolution of Ash by the time we get to, you know, Army of Darkness and all the shit he's gone through at that, up to that point. So
yeah, and he actually has his 15 minutes of fame, though no one will ever know it. That's like, you know, and that's why I really enjoyed the end of the Army of Darkness.
Oh, it's a fantastic end. Well, I mean, which ending to Army of Darkness?
Why? What, there's an alternative? Did I miss something?
Well, okay, if you haven't seen, there's a second one, but tell us about the theatrical ending.
Oh, where he gets back and, you know, he's trying to tell his story when he's in the store?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh, and it's just fantastic, because... And then Deadite stuff happens. And I think that's...
Yeah.
No, go ahead, man.
No, it's a really... I think it's a good cap to the movie.
Yeah, and it's a great setup for the series.
Yeah.
Which happens 22 years later.
Yeah, do you want me to... do you want to look up the other ending, Bill, and watch it for yourself?
Not right now, no.
or do you want me to talk about
it? Yeah, go ahead, talk about it, man.
In the alternate ending to Army of Darkness, I believe Ian Abercrombie's character gives Ash this potion, of which he says, okay, you put like 3 drops on your tongue and you'll fall asleep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
you'll wake up back in your, I guess it's like depending on how many drops you put on your tongue is determining how many,
yes,
errors will have passed. And assuming that, you know, you put X amount, you'll wake up back in your time in theory. So Ash like holes up in this cave. Basically he takes the drops, but he hears a noise at one point.
Yeah.
And he gives himself one more than he should. And when he wakes up and he exits the cave, pretty much the world is in ruins.
Yes, so. Exactly. Yes, I do remember that one. Yeah, I like the other one better.
Yeah, I kind of agree because it's almost like it's played for absurd comedy, but at the same time, it has that sort of tragic time enough at last kind of feel.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I wonder if that's what he was going for originally with that, but...
It was a bit too much, yeah.
No, I love it when, like, here's the wacky store clerk talking about, yeah, his experiences, you know, fighting the deadites. And it's like, what are you, nuts? Get the hell out of here.
Well, Bill, it's been a while since I've watched it. Are the people he's talking to, are they kind of like just... Because it is that Ted Raimi he's talking to at the end of the movie?
To be honest, the last time I saw Army of Darkness was with the ending with the drops, and I haven't seen that version in probably 15 years with him in the store. So,
well, whoever he's talking to, I feel like they're kind of like eye-rolling, just kind of like, I'm just standing here listening to this bullshit.
I just want a paintbrush. Give me a paintbrush. You know, it's like something like that.
Yeah.
And that's why I love the series, because it starts with him in the store.
Yeah, it's perfect because it picks up
right where it left off.
Yeah, and Bill, did you have what were your feelings when they announced that Ash would be returning? Bruce Campbell would be returning as Ash. Did you have any feelings one way or the other before you actually watched the show proper?
Yeah, I did, because, you know, I hate trailers and stuff, but I saw the coming distractions for the TV show and I'm like, oh my God, I gotta see this. And it was just like, it was like, no reservation, put it on my calendar, you know, cancel dates with people, whatever. It's like, but there's a funeral. I can't make it. You know, it's like, it was just like, like, I have to see this thing, and it did not disappoint. It actually took for me probably the sixth episode where I was like, I was really getting into it, and then they hit this stride, and they never looked back for me.
You know what, Bill? I would agree with that. It didn't hook me from the start. I think maybe it was because of the table setting the show had to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Initially, it's like, okay, let's introduce his coworkers who are going to figure prominently into the action. Some of the stuff felt maybe a little, there might've been a little forcedness to it. But it was so well done. Like, the production values are fantastic on that show, I must say. You know, between the digital stuff, the practical stuff, and just the look of the show is really, it's really cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the cast is fantastic. You know, we have Ray Santiago as Pablo, who's just friggin' awesome. Dana DiLorenzo, who's delicious, as Kelly. And Lucy Lawless, man, as Ruby. And Ruby don't play at all, you know? And we haven't had Jill Marie Jones. And then, like, after that, you know, sixth episode, like, they started, you know, when you were hitting their stride and, like, it was just relentless. Then they were, like, throwing in these really unforeseen surprises that were like, whoa, it was like, I didn't see that coming. Or I didn't think that character was going to have this happen to them. And it was just, it was fantastic, man. It was speed. It was tight writing. The story was just really rocking. They had an excellent rhythm. And, and here Ash is like, you know, now it's like they have to save the world pretty much.
Yeah. And, I totally agree with you, Bill. I really think it was a return to form for
just the
series, and it was a worthy continuation because I think anytime people revisit like sort of a time-tested property these days, there's a bit of skepticism. It's like, oh, is it just, are we just giving Bruce Campbell work? Is he just gonna like slouch through it, you know? Are we not gonna have original stories to tell? This show is actually taking the mythos that started with the original series and they're pushing forward with it in ways that are innovative and interesting. And I gotta say, Bill, the design on the demons and monsters in that show fucking, it's creative. It's actually pretty freaky at times. And I was not expecting that at all. So yeah.
And there's more gore than in the movies
that
have been banned, you know? And, and of course in the second season, we have Ted Raimi coming back as Chet.
Yay.
Apparently Ash's old buddy. And one of my personal favorite, you know, awesome character actors, the great Joel Tobeck, who plays Baal. And if you ever watched Cleopatra 2525, he is the man. Oh my god, I forgot the name. It's Keegan. What the hell? Oh my god, I got lost, man. Yeah, he plays the clown, man. He's the clown villain. Cregan.
Okay, I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, good old Cregan, man. And I was like, this is one of the coolest characters ever. And he brings it as Baal, and it's just a blast. You even have evil puppets in this. You have just and weird venues all the time. You know, it just wait till you get to season two, man. It'll blow your mind what they're pulling. And I'm like, my gosh, I can't wait for season three. And I can't see how this wouldn't go beyond season three. I mean, if you're a horror fan, this is something you should really watch. I know people are into Stranger Things and, you know, The Walking Dead and all this stuff, but you really have to check out Ash vs. Evil Dead. It is a blast and a half.
Yeah, seriously, this show should have Walking Dead numbers, you know.
It really should. And, you know, I get the love for Walking Dead, you know, I think, and I get the love for Stranger Things, I think. And, yeah. You know, I've watched both shows, but like Ash vs. Evil Dead, it's just, oh man, it just gets your blood going big time.
Literally.
Yeah. And it might even boil and ooze out of you.
I was going to say it slashes an artery and gets the blood going that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, Bill, yeah, I agree with you. And I think just with us talking about it, we're getting all psyched up about it again. Because, yeah, I think it's a worthy continuation. Like I said, and I think, like you also said, I think it should just keep going and going as long as they have good stories to tell. And I'm really impressed at what the creative team is bringing to it. You know, and it's evolving Ash's character in ways.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Because now it's like he has like a purpose, and it's well at one point he does. You know, he goes back to his old hometown. You know, just problems there. He meets up with his dad, Lee Majors. You know, it's like
yes, yeah.
Oh man, and like, you know, problems with that, and then he's like sells out. And then it's the one thing with his character. He has this ebb and flow to him that's awesome. It's like he's being an idiot again. And now it's like, oh, he's got it together. And, oh, now he's a douchebag. It's like, you know, and you don't know. It all depends on what gets him riled and how he wakes up. And the cool thing is that, you know, Pablo and Kelly keep him balanced, you know, and keep him on track, on point.
Yeah, Bill, and something I was kind of skeptical about was in talking about like maybe, oh, is Bruce Campbell just going to be kind of sitting back while, you know, the supporting characters sort of lift him up. And I like the fact that, you know, he has this sort of Scooby Gang sidekick thing going on, but they're good characters. They have their own personalities. They don't exist just to simply prop up Ash, though a lot of times they do, but they're allowed to have their own inner lives and conflicts, and they're fully realized characters, which is awesome.
Yeah, there's excellent dialogue. They're idiosyncratic characters. I mean, and I'll never forget when when Kelly told Pablo, "You're my vagina." It was just like one of the greatest freaking it's just like, and it worked, and it's like, it's so witty, it's so good, And I'm just having a blast watching it. And it's like when the season was over, I was like just like so bummed out, you know. And can't wait. I mean, waiting for February, it's like, okay. I mean, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing else going on. So it's like, you know, it's like it'll still be snow on the ground, weather will be crappy, but, you know, Ash versus Evil Dead will be on, so life will be good, you know.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, January and February are often looked at as the dumping grounds, but I mean, seriously, that's probably why Ash versus the Evil Dead would fit so well. It's like, oh my God, there's all this crap, and now we can go back to watching Ash versus the Evil Dead, which is awesome. So
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when Walking Dead's over and anything else that you're watching, you know, turn on Ash versus Evil Dead. It is a blast and a half. You will not be disappointed.
And I know we've discussed, and I'm just going to bring it up briefly, the 2013 remake, which we've discussed on our Worst Of show back in 2000. Yeah, and it's a film I have an odd relationship with, but I
what
do
you had
think...
sex with it? What?
Well, Bill, you know, I didn't want the allegations to come out, but you know. But the thing of it is, I wonder if. I just wonder about stuff. I wonder if Ash versus the Evil Dead came about more so because there was less fanfare for the remake, or I'm wondering, is it because the remake was, you know, for what its budget was, financially successful, that it rejiggered an interest in the original Evil Dead? I'm not sure. I just wonder about what the connection was there, because we didn't get Ash versus the Evil Dead until after that remake came out.
Yeah, I don't know, because the remake is hideous. It's a bad story, weak characters. The only character I liked was, who was it? Lou Taylor Pucci, who played Eric, the guy with the glasses. He was the only character with a brain and depth. Everybody else was just like, you know, ridiculous. They did do one thing where I loved how they were seemingly focused on one character as the main character, and then that switched, which is a sometimes not a smart thing to do and not an expected thing to do, but I thought that worked. But other than that, I just thought the whole movie was just not worth it at all.
It's like they wanted to do a serious version of Evil Dead, like,
and it
the
became
most serious...
hokier.
Well, they didn't have a story. They had half a story at best. They had a setup, and then they just like threw gore in your face for 60 minutes, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just so lackluster. It just lacked everything. I mean, yeah, there's blood everywhere and all, but like, so what? And I didn't give a damn about the characters except for that one guy.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you, Bill. That's why I only wanted to bring it up briefly, because I know we both have heavy feels toward that one.
Yeah.
But before we wrap it up, I wanted to mention that part of the legacy of the Evil Dead, in addition to, you know, Ash versus the Evil Dead, which is going on right now, there was also a musical version.
Yes, which I heard was awesome, but I didn't have a chance to see it.
You know, I had the good fortune to see it a bunch of years back at the, don't laugh, the Ephrata Performing Arts Center, which is just this tiny, you know, tiny municipal building sized kind of place. Mm-hmm. But it was a fantastic performance. The production values were awesome. The venue was awesome. Me and my friend and his girlfriend, we sat in this, I guess it was like a 3 rows of chairs down front, which was called the Splatter Zone. So we got sprayed with fake blood a couple times.
Like a gore concert.
Yeah, pretty much. Definitely not as extreme as a gore pit, that's for sure. Okay. But it was so great. The cast was awesome. And the guy who played Ash was actually a dead ringer for a young Bruce Campbell.
Damn.
Yeah, he actually had maybe not the chin, but it was close.
Wow.
And you know, it was kind of obvious he'd worked out at the gym. He was pretty built, but he had that Bruce total Bruce Campbell doppelganger thing going on.
Wow. And
the performances were fantastic. The songs are hilarious in that thing. You know, I think you could pitch that to fans of. It was an interesting audience experience because I feel like you had those season ticket holder people who were a bit older and probably didn't know what they were getting into.
Gotcha.
And then you had the people who very obviously were wearing the black and white horror t-shirts who knew what they were getting into. I had such a fun time with it. It's one of my favorite live performances I've seen, honestly.
Awesome.
It was just so seamless, so well done for a local production. You'd think, but they really put everything into it, and everybody who was a part of it, you know, delivered. And essentially, it's like an amalgamation of Evil Dead 1 and 2, you know.
Right.
So it's essentially they thread both stories together, like where, you know, as far as the events of the musical are concerned, and they do a really good job of it. I actually picked up the Broadway cast recording after seeing it.
And excellent.
It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, definitely, I know some local companies still put it on. I would highly recommend if you get a chance to see it, by all means do. And, you know, there's other stuff, Bill, because Ash has popped up in comic book crossovers.
I believe there
was an actual Evil Dead comic series. You know, you can pick up the Funko Pops of Ash and and the characters from Ash versus the Evil Dead. Bruce Campbell's written books. I haven't read If Chins Could Kill, but I did read his fiction book, Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way, which is hilarious.
He's a riot, man.
Oh, yeah, he's got a great sense of humor. And I actually have the audiobook version of that as well, and he reads the audiobook version of it because he's Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, exactly. He has to. Who else could do it?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of offshoots of just the films themselves that, you know, really speak to the enduring legacy of Evil Dead. the Evil Dead, I mean.
Whatever.
Yeah, so Bill, do you have any final thoughts on the Evil Dead series, any of the movies, anything you wanted to say but haven't before we roll it on out of here?
Evil Dead 2 is my favorite. I gave that 4 stars out of 5. And for the television series, I'm giving it a 5-star rating out of 5.
Holy shit, man.
It's that awesome.
And you don't give out fives. You give out 5 sparingly. I know that about you.
Very much so.
And so here we go, folks. Again, hashtag bring back Boomstick. We simply are not getting this caliber of entertainment anywhere else. Billy Crash says it's a 5 out of 5 star show. I'm close, definitely, to his opinion on it. It's a ton of fun, as you know, bring back Boomstick, bring back fun horror, and that's what Ash versus the Evil Dead is.
Yeah, they do horror comedy right.
Yeah, it's sort of like we do chicken right.
Whatever.
So, Bill, are there some deadites you would like to scream out to tonight?
Yes, we're screaming out to some wonderful souls. We already mentioned the great Susan Layton, and that's Susan on the Ledge on Twitter. She is, as she says, writer girl for 1428_Elm, also Cult_Faction, VHS Revival. She is the queen of style.com, and also go to bringbackboomstick.com. Okay. And check her blog out on imofftheledge.blogspot.com. Also, our great friend John at John's Horror Corner, MFF yep. Horror Corner, to be exact, horror lover, movie critic, film collector, podcaster, go to blogtalkradio.com/moviesfilmsandflicks. And go to moviesfilmsandflicks.com. Hell Horror, and that is hellhorror.com. Join our huge horror community, browse latest horror movies and films, and comment on vampires, demons, werewolves, paranormal, plus more. Good Times, Great Movies podcast, and that is GTGMcast, a podcast about the best and worst of 80s cinema. And you can check them out on iTunes. And, yeah, that's it. Melanie McCurdy, the wonderful, lovely Melanie McCurdy. And she, what does she do? She slays things. She's an author, an artist, a poet. She supports indie film. She supports indie anything. And check her out on Amazon.com. And also go to her website, MelanieMcCurdy.com. Promote horror. Welcome to PromoteHorror.com, where we bring creators of horror and horror fans together. Our goal is to help spread the horror through their promotions, and that's exactly what they do. Go to PromoteHorror.com. The wonderful, the vivacious, real Jilly G, writer, poet, freestyle writer. She loves indie film, The Walking Dead, horror, music, photography, women's movement, feminism, all of it. And check out her work at CrimsonQuintessence.com. The awesome Thomas S. Flowers. Live, laugh, scream. He's a degenerate. Ah, forget it. He's more than that. He's the author of Planet of the Dead, now available on Amazon. Go check it out and go to his excellent website, ThomasSFlowers.com. Two more. Trey C. _ TR. And what does she do? She is the owner of Scream Radio, SCRM Radio to be exact. She's into wine, reading, singing. She's great with narration. She loves horror. She's awesome. Check her out at terrorrecords.co. And finally, Anthony Galatis, and that is Tony PND78. Who is he? He's a concept artist and illustrator. Awesome work. Love his stuff. And you could check him out at Anthony Galatis, Galatis, .carbonmade.com. There we go, Johnny.
Excellent, Bill. You can find me on social media, Twitter and Letterboxd, at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my work, in addition to CrashPalaceProductions.com, at LoudGreenBird.com, alongside Bill Meeker, Frisco Kid TX, and Kim McDonald at Dixie Fairy. Billy, where can people find you?
I'm right here. I'm right here on Twitter at Crash Palace. And, well, you know, it's been down for a while, but it's back up because you're listening to this show. CrashPalaceProductions.com. Go check out the site for writing from Johnny and Kim and Bill Meeker. Check them out. And you could also follow me at, boy, that's pretty much it. Actually, the Facebook Crash Palace site is back. It's back on. It's living. It's in moribund status, but it's still there. So you could check that out at Crash Palace Productions. So that's it, Johnny.
Hey, Bill, I'm going to go swallow some ramen before I swallow some souls.
Groovy. That's all I'm saying about that, man.
This is my boom podcast.
Oh, man. All right, buddy. Have a great one, man.
See you, Bill.
Bye.